It's time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitten Madness.
And here he goes, defense win championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Here are your hosts, Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes.
Welcome back to another episode of Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Good morning on this Saturday morning. I am Dejon Hughes. I am your solo host that gets to talk all things Michigan sports for an hour all by myself while you enjoy all the good nuggets of knowledge that I have. Another great week, and I'm excited to dive into all that we're going to get into this week as the Tigers are back cruising in the way that we would like to see them play. So, of course, we're going to talk about the gritty Tigs and what we need them to do over the next couple of weeks to continue and sustain that success. We're going to talk Lions and the Hall of Fame game, what we expect from them as preseason rolls on and they get into the regular season. We're going to talk the Michigan Panthers leaving and college football in our third segment before we get into our picks to wrap everything up. But as always, I'm doing fantastic. Got another week to just relax here. Going to be spending some time here in town. Got lacrosse tryouts, this morning as you're listening. So I'm out and about enjoying the time, as you will. But as you guys know, I record this on Friday, so this is no new feat to you. I hope that you're going to be enjoying the weekend. Tons of good lacrosse for me coming up this weekend. The playoffs are just around the corner, so it's the nitty-gritty part of the season. And of course, we got baseball dialed up as our Tigers take on the Phillies. But before we talk about the Phillies and what we need the Detroit Tigers to do in that series that's commencing yesterday, today, and tomorrow, we're going to talk MLB standings. Let's start over in the National League this time. We're going to start in the NL East. The Mets still sitting at the top at 62-47. Just a half game back are those Philadelphia Phillies at 61-47. Marlins coming in third, 9 games behind the Mets, 52-55. In the West, the Dodgers still sitting up top, 63-46. Padres only 3 games behind at 60-49. And those Giants 9 games behind the Dodgers at 54-55. In the NL Central, the Brewers have jumped the Cubs at 64-44. At 63-45, the Cubs are 1 game behind them. And the Reds coming in 8 games behind the Brewers at 57-53. When you scroll on up into the American League, we're going to start in the West. Houston Astros 62-47, 4.5 games ahead of the Mariners at 58-52. The Texas Rangers, who are 57-53, are 5.5 games behind those Astros. In the East, the Blue Jays sit atop at 64-46. The New York Yankees at 60-49 are 3.5 games behind them. And the Red Sox are 5 games behind the Blue Jays at 59-51. The Detroit Tigers, who we save, the best for last, of course. The AL Central, the Tigers hit a top at 64-46. They hold a 9-game lead on the Cleveland Guardians, who are 54-54, and a 9.5-game lead on the Royals, who are 54-55. The Twins come in 12 games behind the Tigers at 51-57. We're going to talk about the Twins in this episode as well, as that is the new, that is the upcoming series for them in the middle of next week. And the Chicago White Sox still trudging along, 40-69, 23.5 games behind our Tigers. Overall in the league, the Brewers sit atop of the league at 64-44, and all 1 game behind them are the Cubs, Blue Jays, and Tigers. Rounding out the top 5, those Dodgers sit 1.5 games behind the Brewers. Now that we've gotten through our obligatory standings, let us know where we're standing amongst the league leaders. The Tigers have a very comfortable lead in the AL Central. You can almost say that they've wrapped up that AL Central pennant at this point. They would have to have a disastrous decline, a disastrous fall apart in order for that to happen. I don't see this team crashing and burning to the ground anytime soon. So we can imagine that the AL Central title will belong to the Detroit Tigers at the end of the season, which is coming up pretty quickly here. I mean, just over a month before we get into the most exciting part of baseball, October, where the Tigers should be playing some October baseball. Actually, in fact, I want to see where they are standing in the AL at the moment. They're second in the AL, or excuse me, they're tied for first in the AL with the Blue Jays at 64-46, but the Blue Jays do have the tiebreaker over them as they just beat them in a series by gentlemen sweep 3-1, so that's something to keep an eye on. But the Tigers are comfortably in the playoffs, and they're comfortably looking to win the AL Central, so not too much to worry about here at the moment. Let's get on over to those team leaders. We know who's leading the way on the batting side. It's still Riley Green. He still has a .277 batting average, an OBP of .324, a slugging percentage of .525. He's got 26 homers as he's batted in 84 runs. On the pitching side, come on. Come on. It's Tarek Skubal. 2.09 ERA. He's got 10 wins on the year and 171 strikeouts. It does not get better than Skubal. 9 times out of 10. Homie is going to repeat as the AL Cy Young winner. Looking at the schedule coming up for the Tigers this weekend, which started yesterday, they got the Philadelphia Phillies on the road at Citizens Bank Park. Flaherty took on Suarez Friday night. I'm not sure of the outcome quite yet, but you surely do. That's the 6:45 first pitch today. Later on, we got a 4:05 first pitch in what will be one of the best baseball games we've ever seen. A pitching matchup that is going to be elite as Tarek Skubal will be on the mound against Zach Wheeler. Both aces for each squad. This is going to be insane. As ESPN tells you, tickets are as low as $100. Yeah, that's so cheap. That tells you how blockbuster this game is. If you're not seated and watching or listening to that Tigers game on August 2nd, you're doing something wrong, because it's going to be fun. So make sure later today you got your eyes, your ears, everything else tuned and locked in, because Skubal and Wheeler are going to give us a show. And then tomorrow, 7 p.m. on ESPN for Sunday Night Baseball, the Tigers have not decided who they're going to put on the mound, but he will be going against Sanchez for the Phillies. Then on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, the Twins are coming into town. 6:40 p.m. first pitch on Monday and Tuesday. Casey Mize on the mound. Paddock will be on the mound for the Tigers on Tuesday, and then Flaherty on the mound on Wednesday on MLB Network for a 1:10 first pitch. And then next weekend, it's the Angels coming into town, 7:10 p.m., 6:10 p.m., and 1:40 p.m. Let's dive into, well, what's coming up this weekend before we get into next week's matchup. Like I said, we don't really know what was going to happen with this upcoming weekend, which, you know, that's the case, because we never know what happens with the Friday game before we record this show. So we're going to talk mostly about what could happen on Friday, which is giving the Phillies a 61.8% chance to win that game. So, Ranger Suarez, who's 8-4 on the year, going against Flaherty. Flaherty giving up almost 5 runs a game with 19 homers, compared to just 6 homers for Suarez, who's only given up about 2.5 runs per game. So even if the Tigers lose that first game of the series, the second game looks much better. 49.4% chance for our Tigers to win, compared to 50.6% chance. I mean, this is going to be one of the closest matchups we see. 10-3 for Skubal, 9-4 for Wheeler, 2.09 ERA for Skubal, 2.56 for Wheeler. WHIP for Skubal, 0.84, 0.89 for Wheeler. They both have pitched 133.2 innings. 93 hits for Skubal, 91 for Wheeler. 171 strikeouts for Skubal, 172 for Wheeler. 19 walks for Skubal, 28 for Wheeler, and only 9 home runs for Skubal, while 14 for Wheeler. I mean, Kyle Schwarber and Trey Turner have absolutely been turning it up for the Phillies as well. So this will be an exciting series. Game 2 will be one the Tigers are going to have to try and steal if they want to be able to win this series, and going against Chris Sanchez is going to be tough too. He's 9-3 with 2.55 ERA, 130.2 innings pitched, 110 hits, 139 strikeouts, and 10 homers with just 33 walks. So they're going to have to steal two games, and I would say those two games are probably Saturday and Sunday, knowing that they probably took a loss last night. So that's going to be a tough series for the Tigers, but that is not an end-all be-all, because like I said, they roll into a series with the Twins on Monday, which is much more favorable for the Tigers and their play style. I think this is a series that they can definitely win regardless of what happens with the Phillies over the weekend. Looking at game one, Casey Mize stepping on the mound at 9-4 at the moment. They're giving the Tigers a 61.4% chance to win this game at Comerica. The second game, Chris Paddock against Zebby Matthews, a 63.4% chance for our Tigers to grab another home win. And then even in that last game of the series against Flaherty, against Joe Ryan, they're giving the Tigers a 52.7% chance to come out with a sweep. So they can steal one or two from the Phillies. If they steal two, that's miraculous. But they steal one and then they go out and sweep, that's a great 6 days. I'm happy with that 6 days. You take a break, and then we go back at it against the Angels on the weekend before we get another crack at the Sox in early the following week. This sounds fantastic for what the Tigers have coming up, so I'm looking forward to it. We're going to pick that Twin series later on in the show. That's why I didn't dive too deep into it. But coming up next, we're going to be talking the Lions and that Hall of Fame preseason game they played this week when we come back from the break with more Mid Madness here on 95.3 WBCK. Yay. Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 WBCK. It's time for us to talk about the Detroit Lions as they're about to get ready to jump into another NFL season. They were graced with the opportunity to play in this year's Hall of Fame game during the preseason. They took on the Los Angeles Chargers on Thursday. And let's just say it was quite the game for the Chargers and not so much fun for the Lions. The Chargers came out and looked absolutely phenomenal on all sides of the ball, while the Lions, well, they definitely had their struggles. Now, I do want to preface that realistically, neither one of these teams really had any of their starters playing at all. So that plays a huge factor into this game. But this leaves tons of questions for the Lions and what their season could look like come, you know, late August, early September, and into the rest of the regular season, as the people playing in this game are your backups, your twos, your threes, your fours, which you're going to need your twos and threes in general because guys get tired in the NFL, but you might need your fours, fives, and sixes because guys get injured. And with this showing, I don't know that the three, four, fives, and sixes would get it done for the Lions. And you saw last year, the three, four, fives, and sixes on the defensive end definitely couldn't get it done, as that eventually ended up being their demise in the playoffs. So to me, this is a troubling sign. But let's just talk about the game overall. I mean, the Chargers had full control. They were up 14-0 after one. After at halftime, it was 21-7. And then they got out to a 27-7 lead. And then they were able to finally score one last touchdown in the fourth quarter to stretch their lead to 34-7, coming out with the victory. Trey Lance, the starting quarterback for the Chargers in this game, 13 of 20 for 120 yards. Two TDs, only sacked one time, no interceptions. DJ Uiagalelei came in for relief, 2 for 3, 25 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions, no sacks. So overall, the quarterbacks were 15 of 23 for 140 yards, two TDs, and one sack. Rushing, totally different. Former Michigan man Hassan Haskins had 6 touches for 34 yards. His longest was 11. He averaged 5.7 carries, the most on the team. Kamani Vidal had the most touches at 9 for 37 yards, 4.1 averages. He had 2 TDs and his longest run, 16 yards. Nyheim Miller-Hines goes for 8 touches, 34 yards, 4.3 on the average. His longest run was 9 yards. Keandre Lambert-Smith had 2 receptions for 43 yards and a TD. Will Disley, 2 receptions, 14 yards, and a TD. His longest, 9 yards. Lambert-Smith's longest, 28 yards. Delvon Campbell, Jalen Johnson, Hassan Haskins, Aronde Gaston II, and many others were able to notch a reception as well. Trey Lance did fumble once, but he recovered his own fumble. Dez Kilpatrick and Kendall Williamson also recovered fumbles in this game. Looking at the Lions side of things, Kyle Allen, 9 for 14, 91 yards, 2 interceptions, no touchdowns. Hendon Hooker comes in relief, 3 for 6, 18 yards, 1 interception. They go 12 for 20 for 104 yards and 3 interceptions combined. Craig Reynolds ended up being the leading rusher for the Lions in this game. 10 carries, 38 yards for 1 touchdown. 13 was his longest. Jabari Small, 11 carries, 35 yards for 3.2 average. 6 is his longest. Hendon Hooker, Jacob Saylors, and Kyle Allen all got a couple touches as well. Leading receiver, Isaac Tassala, 2 receptions, 46 yards. His longest was 24. That's out of 3 possible targets. Dominic Lovett goes for 5 receptions, 31 yards. His longest was 10 on 9 targets. Craig Reynolds also had a reception for 10 yards. That was his only target of the game. Grant Studdard had a fumble that he lost. Jacoby Keeney-James also lost a fumble. Jamari Small fumbled, but they didn't say whether he lost it or not. Oh, because Tristan Colvin recovered it. And that is the rundown pretty much of the box score of this game. It wasn't ever really close for the Lions, which makes you wonder, what would it look like this year if games end up getting out of hand? If somebody gets hurt, will the next guy be able to step up? Because these are the guys that are behind all of the starters. And so far, defensive starters have proved that they can't do anything to help this team out in a progressive manner. They punted the ball 4 times for 187 yards, the longest being 57. Chargers punted 3 times for 154 yards, their longest being 54. They both had 1 inside the 20, and J.K. Scott for the Chargers had 1 be a touchback as well. Cameron Dicker goes 2 for 3 on field goals and 4 for 4 on extra points. He puts up 10 points on the day. That's going to be huge any time that you need points. Got to be able to kick field goals. So looking at the outcome of this game, realistically, it means absolutely nothing. Nothing, because it is a preseason game, and it's played much earlier than the rest of the preseason to give a shout out to the Hall of Fame. I think it's a great opportunity for the guys who get this, you know, blessing to go play in the Hall of Fame game. You take the experience for what it is and you enjoy it. You enjoy the Hall of Fame. You take in all that moment. You hope to have your name in the Hall of Fame one day, but you don't blow it out of proportion. You don't really care too much. And obviously both of these teams use this game as an opportunity to see what their bench was like, to see what their depth was like, to see what their team is really going to be made of. Because we know the starters are going to come out. They're going to do their thing, and they're going to be starters. That's the reason why they're starters. That's the reason you don't play them in a Hall of Fame preseason game. It's the reason you only play them for one quarter in your preseason games, or you play them for one or two drives in preseason games. Because you just want them to knock the rust off, but you don't need them in there long enough to get hurt. These are all important factors to play. And with the Lions facing tons of injuries over the last couple of years, the last thing you want to do is go and play in the Hall of Fame game and have someone get injured when they didn't even need to play in the first place. Just troublesome that neither Kyle Allen or Hendon Hooker were able to get anything going for the Lions as far as offensively throwing the ball. I mean, 91 yards for 9 for 14 is not terrible, but when you throw 2 interceptions, that's bad. But if we take the 2 interceptions away, he's 9 for 12, 75%. He just doesn't have a touchdown for 91 yards. I mean, hey, there's other ways to score, and he's obviously able to move the ball, so that's great. Hendon Hooker is a little more questionable. He got sacked twice for 5 yards and he threw an interception, and he only threw for 18 yards on 3 of 6 passes. So already only 50%, and you're only getting 18 yards. Can you actually help us move the ball down the field? He had 3 carries for 9 yards, but you total all of that up together, that's only 27 yards. That doesn't help you go anywhere. In fact, that helps you punt the ball. So what is it that Hendon Hooker is going to be able to do if he goes into a game? I'm not sure that he's going to be able to move the ball down the field to help the Lions score, which just puts more pressure on the defense. The defense is playing more chances for them to get hurt, more chances for them to be tired, and more chances for them to continue to give up a lot of points because, newsflash, the Lions defense gave up a ton of points last year. So it's not like they're this great defense that holds teams. They just were able to get a key stop at the end of the game, and then the offense was able to outscore the other team. It reminds me a lot of old school Packer football when Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers were there. It was simple, hey, just get a stop, hold them to this number, we'll make sure we score at least 1 point more. And I mean, for the most part, that philosophy works. You know exactly your target score as an offense. You know exactly your target score as a defense. You're both working together to make the other's job significantly easier than what it was before. The question is, can this team do it? And defense is one of those teams where you need two, three, four, fives to be able to come in and play. You're running 4 linebackers. That means your 2s are going to play because you're going to need 8 guys to play linebacker. Maybe even your 3s get mixed in there depending on what the game is and what kind of packages you play. Defensive backs. Sure, you're probably only rotating 2 to 3 corners, but you still got 2 to 3 safeties out there that you're rotating as well. You're going to need your 2s, 3s, and 4s in order to have success continuously on the football field. So can the Lions have success when they're 2s, 3s, 4s, and 5s look like they did against the Chargers in the Hall of Fame game? Granted, once again, it is a preseason game. No one is going as hard as they should, but losing 34-7 is a terrible look. It's not even just not a good look. It's not even just a bad look. It is a horrendous look to lose to the Chargers, who are also playing their backups. A guy in Trey Lance, who has proved over and over again that he isn't really an NFL quarterback. DJ Uiagalelei, who many people can't believe he even got drafted in the first place. Hassan Haskins, who hasn't cracked the roster since and gotten significant play time since graduating from Michigan. I don't even know who Tucker Fisk is. Will Disley is like the only actual guy on this team that we should even be remotely worried about. And you go out and you lose by 27. You only put up 1 touchdown. You only score points 1 time. You only get into scoring position 1 time. Yes, it's a preseason game, but these are all worrisome things to think about when the season is only a month away. And just over a month, the Lions are going to be playing real regular season football that matters, that goes against their record and will decide if they make the playoffs or not and have a chance at an NFL Super Bowl championship. But I'm not supposed to worry because it's the preseason. No, I'm terrified. And some of you should be too, because backups do play a factor in the NFL, and it's something that you always have to be ready to go. And right now, it doesn't look like the Lions backups are ready to go. It doesn't mean that can't change. It doesn't mean that they can't prepare themselves and be ready when their number is called. But if you're rolling out the backup squad that we just saw take on the Chargers on Thursday night, you're going to be in for a world of trouble against any half-decent team. That's all we got about the Lions today. We're going to touch in on the Panthers and college football when we get back from the break with more Mid-Madness on 95.3 WBCK.
Detroit sports fans, Wolverines and Spartans alike, this is your sports show, Mitten Madness, with Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes on 95.3 WBCK.
Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 WBCK. It's time for us to talk the Michigan Panthers first, as they may not be in Michigan anymore. Well, more accurately, they are not going to be in Michigan anymore. They are one of the 4 USFL teams that would be relocated for the 2026 season, along with the Houston Roughnecks, Birmingham Stallions, and Memphis showboats. They neither confirmed nor denied the news was the UFL. Every year, the league office looks at planning for next season and beyond. At this point, we have nothing to report on any unauthorized speculation. According to Larson, two of the four new markets will be in Boise, Idaho, and Columbus, Ohio. The remaining two will be in cities yet to be determined in Florida and Kentucky. The Panthers have not made an official relocation announcement. They were initially announced as a USFL franchise in 21. They played the first season in 22. They went 2-8, and then they made it through the XFL-USFL merger in 24. Along with seven USFL teams, they played the home games at Protective Stadium in Birmingham, Alabama for 2022 before moving to Ford Field in 2023 and 2024. Ford Field played a big role in why the Panthers are moving. Larson says that the stadium charges the UFL $500,000 for each Panthers home game, saying the relationship between the league and the stadium has fizzled out over the last couple of years. Still, UFL officials said in May they were confident the league would grow as the unified league just wrapped up its second year. So it looks like we're going to be out of cheap spring football. I think the UFL was a great opportunity to enjoy some football in the spring for a great price point. But when the Lions are going to be pricing them at $500,000 per game and they're not bringing in nearly that amount of money, I don't see them being able to stay long term without hemorrhaging money and eventually going under and folding as an organization. And we don't get spring football at all. So in order for the UFL to continue to be a thing, they're going to have to move on from some of these places that are dipping their hand a little too far in the cookie jar. And that's definitely what we have with Ford Field and the Detroit Lions. So Michigan Panthers are kind of going to be a no more scenario here in Detroit. Maybe we'll get lucky and they'll stay for one more year because they can't find a relocation point. But it does not sound like that is in the plans. So maybe if we get an update, we'll tell you. But be on the lookout for no more spring football here, and you'll be stuck watching on the television. More is happening in the college football realm, though. There are some teams that they're expecting to either break through or bounce back, depending on how their year went. Well, here are some teams expected to remain just as good as they were last year. Those Sun Devils out of Arizona State, Baylor, who was 8-5 last year. They're expecting them to stay about that good. The Buffalo Bulls expected to fight in that mighty MAC conference. Illinois Fighting Illini are expected to remain around that 10-3 record that they had last year and fight for a playoff spot once again. The Miami Hurricanes are expected to stay near the top of the ACC alongside the Pittsburgh Panthers, who had a 7-6 season, and they're expecting them to either maintain that level of play or get a little bit better. Now, who is rebounding from a 2024 stumble? They say the Air Force Falcons, who were 5-7 last year, should improve this year and either get to 7-5 or at least 8-4. The Seminoles, 2-10 last year. They're not expecting them to go 2-10 whatsoever this season and expect them to have a much better season than they had in the past. Southern Miss, who went 1-11, is expected to grab 2-3, maybe 4 more wins this year and be a little more competitive within their conference and the country. Looking at defending champ, or excuse me, runner-ups from a few years ago with a 14-1 record, they were 6-7 last year. The Washington Huskies, in the past four seasons, they have bounced from 4-8 to 11-2 to 14-1 to 6-7. It's enough for obvious motion sickness, but a combination of Williams, Coleman, Boston, and semi-experienced offensive line should do good things. Plus, the defense has plenty of new exciting players like tackle Ty Uangale, linebacker Zaire Alexander, corner Takario Davis, safety C.J. Christian, and Alex McLaughlin. The new coordinator, Ryan Walters, might get away with the aggressive man defense he usually prefers. Playing four projected top 20 teams can make 8-4 or so the ceiling this year, but improvement is still likely. And there's one more team they're expecting to improve. Take a wild guess at who it is. I'll give you a few seconds. I'll let you know that some of us here definitely like that team, and I'll let you know it's definitely here in the midden. Okay, you've had enough time. If you didn't say the Michigan Wolverines, you're wrong. They had a 15-0 perfect national championship record in 23. And then last year, they went 8-5. From the Big Ten preview, they say the Wolverines went unbeaten when scoring at least 24 points but they reached that mark in only 6 of 13 games, thanks primarily to a black hole at the quarterback position. They ranked 91st in total QBR and 131st, which is last nationally among non-service academies in passing yards per game. Either five-star freshman Bryce Underwood or veteran transfer Mikey Keene will begin the season at QB for Moore's second Michigan team, and it's probably fair to assume that Underwood will finish it there. His first spring was up and down, but going from the aforementioned black hole to the best high school prospect in the country is quite the leap. Seeing Michigan's projected 10th overall was a bit concerning, as the offense still has loads of questions, but they'd be surprised if the Wolverines didn't have a top 10 defense, and the schedule features only one projected top 15 team, and they won 8 games and beat Ohio State and Alabama while getting almost nothing from their QB. Even if Underwood isn't ready to lead a CFP team yet, a return to 9-3 or so and occasional actual passing yardage doesn't seem like too much to ask. So they are expecting, you know, Michigan to put it together and get better quarterback play. But another big story going on in the college football world, Colorado head coach Deion Sanders played in the NFL. It was widely understood that every time he touched the field, he could end up in the end zone. On Monday in Boulder, we might have seen the best return of Prime's career. Dressed in denim overalls, a white crew neck t-shirt, and a cowboy hat, Sanders took to the podium from arguably the most important news conference of his life. He told the world that he was cancer-free after having his bladder removed after doctors discovered a tumor. He encouraged people to get checked, detailed the specific data points of his health journey, and urged folks to take their lives seriously. Just when everyone thought and speculated that the hater hype machine that has had multiple attacks was going to go up by a score or two, Prime took it the other way with a flourish, not dissimilar to when he once went 93 yards for an interception, except this time his walk has a limp and his words are the words of Jesus. But this wasn't easy. Men, everybody get checked out, because if it wasn't for me getting tested for something else, they wouldn't have stumbled upon this. And make sure you go to get the right care, because without wonderful people like this, I probably wouldn't be sitting here today, because it grew so expeditiously. I could say the same crowd who said Prime would skip from Colorado to the pros with his son, they're still wrong, as he's there and continues to pour into the Boulder and Colorado community as he looks to lead another team to success. I'm excited that Prime's going to be around to continue coaching football. It was a crazy scenario when they said that he had cancer, and everybody obviously was worried about him and his health and what things would play like for him with this scenario. But he quickly got things under control, got the right care, and is ready to be back on the sidelines, pouring into the Colorado football program and the Boulder community as a whole. That's how things are done. And I mean, I don't want to get mushy or gushy here or anything, but he's absolutely correct. Men, go get checked as early as possible for all kinds of things. It's never too early to catch something. And I mean, and this isn't just to the men. Women out there as well, get checked. Making sure that you have the best possible health at all times is never the wrong thing to do. I understand that isn't easy for everyone. There are a lot of barriers that may be in the way. But when you have time and you can afford to do so, go get checked. Because it literally could be a life-saving decision, as we saw with Coach Prime, or it could just be that you're completely healthy. Either way, you get to know you're healthy, or you get to get ahead of something before it becomes a bigger issue. Once again, great health to Coach Prime. Prayers and thoughts out to you and your family as you continue to go through this. But we're just excited that you're still going to be on the sidelines coaching football. We're going to be back with our picks after a break with more Mid Madness here on 95.3 WBCK.
95.3 WBCK.
Welcome back into Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK. It's time for us to get into the picks for the week. But before we do that, you know, we got to do a rundown of what happened the week before. I had a pretty solid week. Now, remember, we picked that late Thursday game, so from the week before last week. So we had to pull that one over. Got a W in that as the Fever took down the Aces. So that gave me 4-3. In the 7 games that I had to pick from. So that gets me up to 43-23 on the year, a solid 20-game lead for myself. So I am doing absolutely fantastic, as I am 20 games above 500. 100. Getting into this weekend, we're going to have tons of fun. We got a baseball series to talk through, a couple of WNBA games, and then we're going to get back in that octagon. But we will start on the diamond as our Detroit Tigers taking on the Minnesota Twins. This is a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday series. The Twins are coming into this series supposedly 51-57. That's what they are at this current moment. They're 21-33 on the road. They only have a 38.6% chance to win the first game of the series. And it is, in fact, undecided on who will be pitching for them. But Byron Buxton has been absolutely fantastic for them. Hitting-wise, 23 home runs, 2.82 on the batting average, 59 RBIs. He has a 3.43 OBP and a 561 slugging percentage. Joe Ryan is the leader on the pitching side of things for the Twins. 2.82 ERA with 10 wins and 137 strikeouts. Tigers have a 61.4% chance to win the first game at Comerica Park. A 6:40 p.m. first pitch on Monday, August 4th. This is the second time that we have seen the Twins this year. We do currently hold a 2-1 lead on the Twins. Twins won the first game back on June 27th, 4-1. Then the Tigers bounced back in the two subsequent games, 10-5 and 3-0 on 6/28 and 6/29. So they're going to look for hopefully a sweep here to go up 5-1 and have a commanding lead on them as they're 12 games ahead of them currently in the American League Central standings. The Twins are on a two-game losing streak, while our Tigers are on a four-game winning streak. They won their last game against the Toronto Blue Jays before sweeping the Arizona Diamondbacks. Meanwhile, the Twins lost two games to Washington before beating Boston and then losing two more games to the Red Sox. They're going to be playing again this weekend as well. I'm not sure who they're playing, but either way, that doesn't have too much to do with the Tigers. I think the Tigers take game one with Casey Mize on the mound, even though he's got a 9-4 record with a 3.43 ERA. They're playing at home where they're 36-21 on the year. Going to give them the benefit of the doubt to win that one. Chris Paddock, who just recently got signed to the Tigers, going to get his first start against Zebby Matthews at Comerica Park. They're giving the Tigers a 63.4% chance to win this game as well. It's all just going to come down to the pitching. Matthews is 2-3 on the year. He has a 5.67 ERA in just 33 innings. He's got 38 hits, 42 strikeouts, 9 walks, and 4 homers. Meanwhile, Paddock, 4-9 on the year, 4.77 ERA, a 1.24 whip in 117 innings, 118 hits, 88 strikeouts, 27 walks, and 17 homers. I'm not sure about this game because we don't know too much about Chris Paddock and how he's going to fit into this rotation, but even if they steal this one, it may not change too much because coming up, the last game of the series will be tough. You got Joe Ryan taking on Jack Flaherty. Ryan has been fantastic this year at 10-5. We talked about his ERA. He's got 88 hits, 137 strikeouts, 24 walks, and 14 homers, and 121 innings pitched. The Tigers do still have a slim 52.7% chance of coming out on top of the Twins. And you know I would be insane if I didn't think the Detroit Tigers were going to win this series. So obviously I'm picking the hometown gritty Tigs to take down the Twins. I would love another sweep. That would get us up to a 7-game win streak, which would be phenomenal on the year. But also, it's another series win, and it really places more of a gap between yourself and the Twins and some of the other teams in the AL Central as we get into the grittiest of times, which is August and September, as everybody's trying to play in that October playoff round. Moving on into the hardwood, we're going inside. We got the Mystics taking on the Dream down in Atlanta on the 3rd. This is 3 p.m. on ESPN3 at the Gateway Center. 78.6% chance for the Dream to come out on top compared to just 21.4% for the Mystics. The Mystics are 13-14 on the year, which is great for them compared to what they did in the subsequent seasons in the past. 4-8 on the road this year. Meanwhile, the Dream having a far better season than many people thought they would. 16-11 on the year. They're 8-4 at home at the moment. Brittany Griner, Jordan Canada, and Ryan Howard all expected to be back for this game for the Atlanta Dream. The Dream currently hold a 2-1 series lead on the Mystics. The home team 2-1 so far in the series. The Dream are the one team to still win on the road. I think that they're going to be able to continue to win at home as well. 8-4 at home, and also two of the three games in this series already, the home teams have won. That tells me the home team might win again. And I mean, once again, the Dream are still trying to fight to be second in the conference. They're only a game and a half, first in the conference, only a game and a half behind the New York Liberty for first in the Eastern Conference. This game could be huge. This is another Eastern Conference matchup. I say the Atlanta Dream come out on top, and they're going to continue to put pressure on the Liberty, looking for them to make a mistake and try and overcome them. We're going to stay partially in the East Coast, but we got an interconference matchup going down as the Indiana Fever will be traveling to Climate Pledge Arena to take on the Seattle Storm. The Fever 15-12 on the year, 6-6 on the road. We do know Caitlin Clark is going to be out until at least August 12th. The Storm have a 58.6% chance to win this game as they are led by Nneka Ogwumike, 17.4 points, 7 rebounds. Skylar Diggins, she took Smith off of her name, leading the team with 6 assists. Meanwhile, Kelsey Mitchell pouring in almost 20 points a game. Aaliyah Boston grabbing 8 rebounds. Clayton Clark still leading the team with 9 assists. Both teams are 6-4 in their last 10. The Seattle is on a 1-game win streak. Fever are on a 3-game win streak. 8-5 screams at me, though. And granted, Fever won the first game on the road, but nobody likes losing at home, and you definitely don't like losing at home to the same team twice. I think the Storm can bounce back from that June 24th home loss to the Fever and come out on top against the Fever this time at home, as this game will be played on ABC and ESPN Plus at 3 p.m. on the 3rd. So I'm going to take the Storm to win this one, but that may come back to bite me. Last game that we got going down on the hardwood, the Golden State Valkyries, who are a 513-13 on the year. They're 5-9 when they travel out on the road, are taking on the Las Vegas Aces, who are 14-13. But half of those 14 wins have come at home, as they're 7-4 when they're playing at Michelob Ultra Arena. This game going down Sunday, 6 p.m. Kayla Thornton, who's now out for the season, leading scorer for the Valkyries and leading rebounder, going to make things tough for them to beat Aja Wilson, who's also leading scorer and rebounder for the Aces, and Chelsea Gray, who's pouring in 5 assists to add to the 22 points and 10 rebounds for, or 22 points and 9 rebounds, excuse me, for Aja Wilson. The Aces are 1-1 in this series. The home team has won this game both times. You know how I feel about trends. Both teams are on a 2-game win streak, except the Aces are 6-4 in their last 10 versus the Valkyries being 4-6 in their last 10. They both beat the Dream recently. But when you look at the Valkyries, they have lost to the Storm and the Sun. The Sun is a very questionable loss, as they only have 4 wins on the year, but they have beat the Wings and Dallas, DC, the Mystics, in connection with the Dream. Meanwhile, the Aces, who are also 3-2 in this span, have beat the Sparks, beat the Wings, lost to the Lynx, which, like, pretty much everybody's losing to the Lynx. They lost to the Fever by 10, and then they also beat the Dream. I'm going to go with trends, because trends oftentimes continue to follow through, which means I have the Aces winning this game because they are the home team, and the home team has won every game in this series so far. We're going to get in on the Octagon. We're going out to the UFC Apex. So we're not even leaving Las Vegas, because this is on the 2nd. Going down, the prelims on ESPN and ESPN Plus at 6 p.m. The main card on ESPN and ESPN Plus at 9 p.m. We're going to start with the lightweight co-main event between Matheus Rebecki and Chris Duncan. Rybetski is 20-2 on the year. He's from He's from Poland. He's 5'7", 160 pounds, 32 years old, at 66 inches on his reach. He's a southpaw fighter. Meanwhile, Chris Duncan, 13-2, he's 5'10", 155 pounds, 32 years old, 71 inches on the reach, and he's orthodox in his fighting stance. The odds, they tip in the favor of Rybetski, who's negative 220 on the money line, but that plus 180 isn't too far for Chris Duncan. They are expecting this to go over a half round, and they say the fight will not go the distance. So that's something to keep an eye on as well. When it comes down to it, I don't know too much about Rybetski or Chris Duncan. Their records speak for themselves. They're very evenly matched. You have a little bit more size advantage going for Duncan, but it's going to come down to who can be successful. And in teams and fights like this, oftentimes I go with the favorite. I think I'm going to do the same thing here. Rybetski really speaking at me with that 20-2 record from Poland, where there's been a lot of great fighters from Poland recently. I think he comes out on top. The last fight of the weekend, Tatsuro Tara taking on Hoon Sung Park. Tara, a negative 370 favorite, 5'7", 125 pounds, 25 years old, 70-inch reach, and an orthodox fighting stance. He's 16-1. Meanwhile, Park is a perfect 10-0, 5'7", 125 pounds, 29 years old, 66 inches on the reach, and an orthodox fighter at a plus 280. Once again, I'm going with the favorite because it just sounds right. So I got Tara. That gives me Tigers, Dream, Storm, Aces, Rybetski, and Tyara. I hope that you guys have just as fun of a weekend as I'm going to have. And we'll be back next week with more Mid Madness right here on 95.3 WBCK.
Join Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitten Madness on demand on the WBCK app. Sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.